This is Floss Weekly with Simon Phipps and Dan Lynch. Coming up this week on the show that's about free Libre and open source software, we have the very important LibreOffice project, and we'll be talking to the founders and engineers who work on that software. That's coming up next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Simon Phipps and Dan Lynch. Episode 214, recorded on June 13th, 2012. LibreOffice. Hello, this is Floss Weekly, the show that's all about free Libre and open source software. I am your stand-in host, Simon Phipps, while Randall Schwartz is on vacation, and I'm joined today by Dan. Dan, you're in the UK too.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Hello, Simon. Hello, everyone. I'm up here in Liverpool, a little bit north of where you are, but we've succeeded in another British takeover of Twit, Floss Weekly anyway.
I don't know how that happened. Keeps on happening. So it's, being British, we really ought to be talking about the weather or about the royal family or something. But I think this week, the subject of Floss Weekly is actually much more interesting than that. It's about the LibreOffice project. Are you a LibreOffice user, Dan?
I am, yeah. I've been using it a long time. I know we're formerly OpenOffice, now LibreOffice. We'll probably get into that in the discussion. But this is one of the shows I've been really excited to actually get to, because I've seen it coming up in the schedule, and I managed to sneak my way onto it. So I'm very excited to hear more about LibreOffice.
Absolutely. So I have a closer connection to it than that, because obviously it's derived from the OpenOffice project, which I used to be involved in when I worked at Sun Microsystems. And I've also been volunteering on both the Apache OpenOffice and LibreOffice project. So I've seen a fair amount going on. I'm going to be very interested to talk to Michael and to Charles about what they're actually doing on the show. Is there anything in particular you want to find out this week?
I think a lot of people are interested in the mobile applications for this and the web applications. But I'm curious, you mentioned you've got like a foot in both camps. Would you be upset if I called you a double agent or something? You're some kind of
I've actually been called worse than that in some of the project mailing lists. So it really isn't a problem.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, I think back to the serious point. I think the web interface and stuff, the online version that they're working on is something that could be really, really important to the future of the whole project, really. Everything, we're all talking about the cloud these days. You can't get away from it. So I think LibreOffice needs to be in the cloud along with everything else.
Oh, okay. Well, we can slipstream straight into the show this week. So without any further ado, let's bring on our guests. Charles Schulz, you're speaking to us from France, I believe.
Yes, I am. Straight live from Paris.
Fantastic. And we've also got Michael Meeks on the line here from the UK, along with Dan and I.
Indeed, yes. Near Cambridge, the original and best.
All right. Well, we'll have the discussion about which area of England has had the most rain, maybe a little bit later on. But first of all, if we could go in, you're both working on the LibreOffice project. Charles, what is the LibreOffice project? Could you just sum it up for the one person on the planet who doesn't know?
So LibreOffice is the free and open source office productivity suite that is basically the successor to the OpenOffice org project.
That was very concise. Yeah. Yes.
Yes.
So so you say the successor to the OpenOffice.org project there. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about that? Because I thought that the OpenOffice.org project was still going at Apache or something.
This is a complex situation. Let's put it that way. What happened was that after Oracle swallowed or gobbled up Sun Microsystems, most of the community around the OpenOffice.org project felt that, if anything, the issues that we were facing, and obviously an open source project always has issues, but this kind of issues would not be solved involved in any way by the new stewardship. So the community, and I believe Michael Nix, myself, and quite a few others, essentially decided to, instead of, you know, try to speak about the issues and try to see how we could do something, we decided to actually do something about it. So that's how the LibreOffice project went to life. Now, with respect to your comment on the Apache OpenOffice existence, I think that what essentially happened was that most of the community went away after the LibreOffice project and the Document Foundation were announced. What happened then was that what we didn't have was the ownership of the trademark, OpenOffice.org. And what happened was Oracle, after a period of, let's put it that way, reflection, went ahead and decided to agree with IBM to essentially give the trademark and the code of OpenOffice.org away to the Apache Software Foundation. And today, there is this Apache OpenOffice project, and it is essentially manned by IBM. So I think IBM is very happy about it. But the question remains, is this a project which is actually the successor to the OpenOffice.org project, or is this something that is a little bit different? And I think that it is definitely one of the successors of the OpenOffice.org project. But I also think that it's going to be a little bit different in the future.
Right. Well, we were actually seeing quite a few questions about that sort of topic coming up in the IRC chat. I wonder whether we ought to dive straight into one of those and ask you about licensing. One of the people in the IRC asks about the licensing situation. As I understand it, Apache has not been given the code to OpenOffice.org. They've simply had Oracle, who own the copyright, change the license to the Apache license. And you at LibreOffice are still working on the LGPL v3, I believe. Is that correct? And what problems does that cause for you?
That's absolutely correct.
Charles?
But yes, go ahead, Michael.
Thanks. So that's entirely true. I think the code has been licensed to the Apache Software Foundation, and it's being released, of course, under the Apache license version 2. The interesting thing is that when you look at that code and when you start digging into what changed for the Apache 3.4 release, you discover that, in fact, 90%+ of the files are completely unchanged since OpenOffice 3.4.0 Beta 1, which is what Oracle put out. So the vast majority of the code there is essentially the same, except for the header change. So, I mean, perhaps that's what you expect. It's a huge code base, and there's not been a whole lot of time, but, you know, I think 94% was the number I came up with. So the good news is that makes it relatively easy for us to, as it were, rebase our code on top of that, and then take advantage of more flexibility around licensing. So, you know, the LGPL v3 is an excellent license, and we'll continue shipping our binaries under that. But it's unfortunately not future-proof. What we really want is an or-later license that allows us to move to new license versions in the future. And so luckily, the Apache license allows us to do that. So simply by rebasing our code on top of the Apache code base, we can achieve being able to choose new versions of the GPL in the future. And the vehicle we're using to do that is the Mozilla Public License version 2, which is actually a quadruple license intrinsically. So it's not only LGPL v3, it's GPL v3, it's AGPL v3, and it's, of course, the MPL itself. So we have lots of flexibility there. And that's, I think, probably the good thing that came out of what Oracle did. It really helped the LibreOffice project sort out our future in terms of licensing. So, you know, it's not a particularly positive thing that, you know, IBM particularly didn't choose to work with the rest of the community around the code base, which is a shame. But this is a good thing that came out of it. So, you know, let's look at the positives.
Yeah, and something that is coming up in the IRC right now, you mentioned IBM there, and there's lots of talk about Symfony and the fact that they're going to now dump a load of code from Symfony into the Apache OpenOffice project. And some people are asking in the IRC, do you think there'll be anything in there that you guys could pull into LibreOffice, or would you have any interest in that, or do you feel like it's a separate thing now and you're happy to do what you're doing?
So I think it's foolish to not take good code from wherever it comes.
Mm-hmm.
So good code comes out of IBM. If it's suitably licensed, we'll include it and gratefully include it and credit it as coming from IBM. So I think over the next 6 months, as my rebasing effort is continuing, and it's going pretty well, I think we've got about up to 4,500 files, something like that, done so far. But as that completes, you'll start to see changes coming in that are from IBM and from others. And although there is some degree of porting work required to move between the code bases, and that porting work will increase with time, simply because we're doing a huge amount of code cleaning that isn't there on the other side. Nevertheless, we'll be able to take code changes from there. And if it makes sense, that's great. I mean, the big feature that Symfony appears to have is this sort of sidebar rework, which looks quite nice. But we have a UI team at LibreOffice, and you know, merging that really depends on what they have to say about it. So I anticipate taking the code out of there, improving it, making it cleaner and better, and merging whatever makes sense that we can find from that. So yeah, I mean, expect to see that. There are some caveats there, though, of course. But the first thing is that our 3.6 release, hopefully you have some time to talk about that later, is now in feature freeze. So you know, we'll expect to see that coming out in 2 months' time or so. So we're doing intense bug fixing on that at the moment. So we'll be looking at 3.7 before any of those features come out. And the second thing to say is that disentangling what Symfony is actually remarkably difficult. The code dump they provided is not based on the Apache OpenOffice release. It's based on a 3.1 release, which, assuming it's 3.11, which I hope it is, because it had a whole lot of bug fixes, sort of froze in August 2009. So this is not the most contemporary thing to base chunks of your code on. So hopefully that rebasing process will continue, but really you need to talk to IBM to work out what they plan to do there and how to get that, you know, mixed code base, which is parts of 3.4, parts of 3.3.1, or sorry, 3.1.1, and how to fuse that together into something that's sensible. I have no idea. The great hope is that IBM will show that it is a good community player by building on top of the existing code base and splitting out the features, explaining what they are, and merging them. And I'm optimistic. I mean, Apache has a whole lot of mentoring background and process to encourage that sort of thing to happen and to make sure it does, you know, that, that people don't shove huge chunks of code change in without explaining what they are and, you know, showing who wrote them even. I mean, that's a very useful thing to have in your change history. So you can ask people, you know, why did you change this thing? What is it about? So, you know, the hope is that will be finished and done in the right way and we'll merge whatever's good. So that's
right. So now, actually, this interview was all about LibreOffice rather than about Apache OpenOffice. So let's get back onto LibreOffice. You mentioned there the 3.6 release. I downloaded the beta of that today. It's up on the website, I notice. What's new in that release that is of interest to people?
Gosh, well, there are lots of things that's new in that release. So there are a large number of improvements, particularly from volunteers. I cheat now by reading the feature page. You can see that in our wiki. We actually build the wiki page during the process of the development. So as you go, hopefully it expands. There are a few things that aren't in there. Let me tell you what's not there that I know of that is getting in past the feature freeze. So one is a Windows 7 integration stuff. So there's a whole load of nice glass effect graphical user interface improvements to make it look like, you know, actually a native Windows 7 application. That's not in the wiki page yet. What else? Oh, there's a really nice, I forget what it's called, conditional formatting feature in the spreadsheet coming, so you can see sort of bar graphs inside each cell telling you, you know, what proportion of an area is represented by this cell. That's a really poor explanation. Either way, you get a very nice graphical view of the relative magnitude of cells inside those cells themselves. So that's coming too. But I mean, there's loads of other things. Interoperability is improved again. One of the main thrusts of LibreOffice, I guess, is interoperability and getting people into the ODF world. So we have now CorelDRAW feature coming, and there's a very capable CorelDRAW filter actually in 3.6, which you can play with. Hopefully, that'll encourage people to move into the free software world from some of these older products. And you know, that adds on to the Visio import, I guess we did in the last release. The next release Looks like you'll have a Microsoft Publisher filter. Again, you can see the wiki page now building for 3.7 after our feature freeze. And so I think that's a continuous thread going through. You know, we want to get people into a world of open, free software, of course, and open document formats. I guess there isn't a free versus open source document format war happening yet. So I think
yeah, we've managed to avoid that one, fortunately. Now, this 3.6 release, it seems only yesterday I was downloading 3.5.4. You seem to do releases quite often. Why is that?
I think there's this philosophy in free software of release early, release often. And, you know, if we have bug fixes, we like to get them out to users. That's particularly true of security bug fixes. You must bear in mind we have a very old code base that has not had systematic cleanup until relatively recent time. I think the LibreOffice project is one of the, you know, the few. I mean, we've actually really started to do large-scale code changes and code cleanups, which, of course, has some risks. You know, you can introduce regressions temporarily. But on the other hand, if you never clean your code, you build up this vast technical debt. So we're starting to pay that debt down. Part of that is security fixes. And so we really recommend that people would stick with the latest released version there, those point releases. Of course, if you don't want to update, that's fine too. You don't have to. There's nothing stopping you. But if you want to be reporting bugs, be aware that lots of bugs are fixed in the latest release. And, you know, we've fixed, I forget, I mean, the list for 3.5.4, and it's hard with all those version numbers, was, you know, 30-plus bugs long, and we fixed many quite serious blockers for various people in various corner cases. So,
right.
Yeah, so we'd like to do regular releases, one a month.
Right, right. So, I mean, this brings up, the question of whether you're targeting developers or whether you're targeting end users with the work that you're doing, because that release early, release often philosophy seems to be good for developers, but would seem to be confusing for, say, enterprise users who are trying to use it in their business. How do you think that is worked out for LibreOffice?
Well, I think it goes pretty well. Charles, do you want to jump in? I don't want to hog the limelight here. You know, I mean, you had such a nice photo, you know. There it is. Brilliant.
So, I think you know, if we wanted to keep things rather simple, because this is actually a complex topic. But I think that, you know, I'd like to start with just saying that when it comes to enterprise users and enterprise deployments, so corporate deployments take time. And more importantly, the upgrades of corporate deployments take even more time. So right now we do have quite a few deployments of LibreOffice in professional contexts and large deployments. That's actually what we're talking about. But at the same time, I think we still have a pool of existing users of OpenOffice.org who still haven't actually moved, because it simply takes time. So you'd be amazed at the amount of corporate users who are still using OpenOffice.org 3.1 on their desktop. And that is actually quite, it is amazing. But this being said, I think what is also very important is that we're not just releasing software. I mean, obviously, this is a major part of what we do. But what the Document Foundation has decided it would embark in is to grow and develop a responsible and sustainable ecosystem of service providers and more generally experts around LibreOffice. And in order to do this, we decided to take the rather unusual step to develop a full certification program for the LibreOffice developers, the LibreOffice trainers, support providers, migration experts, and so on and so forth. And the objective behind this certification program is to make sure that the potential customers will get the adequate trackability, the adequate readability into the existing offers on the market. And this is something that we had noticed very early on that the former OpenOffice.org project had failed to do, which was to grow an actual ecosystem of migrations to OpenOffice.org. Well, that's what we're trying to do right now with LibreOffice. And it is a major task, not just because this is an actual certification program, but also because at that time, or at the time of its glory, so to speak, OpenOffice.org was the second most downloaded free software project. And this is something that essentially creates volume, so to speak. And it's not just its users' volume. It should be a major business volume. So we want to address this, not because we want to make money as the Document Foundation, but we would like to address this because we feel this is something that could significantly grow the user base, grow the customer base, and grow the confidence in LibreOffice and ultimately in free and open source software.
Right, right.
So this is Michael. Sorry, Simon. Can I jump in on that as well?
Jump in on that as well, Michael. Go for it.
Enterprise. So I think the key thing to me about the certification program, which makes it exciting, is that in the past, OpenOffice has had the problem that lots of people have deployed it, but they haven't had very good support. So sadly, sometimes deployments fail simply because of silly bugs that could easily be fixed. And in the past, there has been, and you know, we'll mention no names, but there has been an approach of going to the free software project and annoying it to try to provoke it into fixing your bugs so that you can then go back to your paying customer and say, your bug is now fixed. And this provides a very, very unsatisfactory experience, not only for the project, which gets loads of angst it doesn't need, but also for the customer who doesn't have any dependability or reliability or any ability to predict when fixes will happen. So a key emphasis of the certification program is to ensure that people can get good level 3 support, which of course would entitle them to builds that have their bug fixes in a reasonable timeline. And so that's something, I mean, gratuitous corporate plug, that's something SUSE provides. So, you know, we have Windows builds, for example, they don't release every month. We try and pick a very good base, and then we release MSI patch files, and customers that have specific bugs can have those fixed. And, you know, they can get a patch that has their fix or even small feature in it and deploy that to their installation. So they, you know, so we hope that other partners and people provide similar services like that. And we can make sure that people have a good professional experience of getting LibreOffice deployed in their enterprise and having a really good experience of that support wise. And of course, that feeds back into the free software project, too. Of course, all of our fixes from SUSE and from many others, you know, free software, and are out there for others to use and go into those minor point bug fix releases that you see. So, we think that's really important.
So, Michael, I did have a question for you.
I would also concur with that. Sorry, Simon, go ahead.
So I had a question for you, Michael. One of the things that I've heard said about LibreOffice is that LibreOffice is for Linux and that Apache OpenOffice is for Windows. How would you respond to that?
Well, I think that's pretty ridiculous, actually. If you look at our download breakdown, which is one of those things that people like to look at, actually, it's give or take identical to Apache. Actually, we have more Linux users and slightly fewer Mac users. I don't know why that is. That's pretty interesting, isn't it? So approximately 80% of our downloads are Windows users from the download site. A large volume of SUSE's paying customers are on Windows. It's a platform we take very seriously. We do some amazing development for it. Actually, if you look at the LibreOffice package on Windows versus what used to be OpenOffice, we've done some major improvements there. So there's a single MSI file. You know, the packaging is much improved. The installation flow is cleaner. There isn't this nasty NSYS wrapper around it that makes things hard for administrators. You know, there's just a lot of improvements there for the Windows platform and in packaging and deployment. So, yeah, I think it's just a nonsense. LibreOffice is clearly a multi-platform project, and Windows is a substantial emphasis of that. Not because we like it. It's not a free software platform. We prefer to use Linux, and, of course, I build for Windows when I have to inside a VirtualBox on a SUSE machine. But, unfortunately, that's where the customers are and the end users. So we take it very seriously, and we fix problems there. Quickly. And we're doing work to improve that. Friedrich Ströber, I think even now, is working to make it easier to debug on Windows and get symbols out so people can produce better backtraces just to close the loop on those Windows bugs more quickly so we can get them fixed easily by more developers. So that's where we're at, really. Mm. It's clearly a cross-platform product.
And speaking of platforms, that brings us neatly into the next topic that I wanted to talk about. Lots of people are asking in the IRC, you announced last year there were going to be an Android version and a web version as well. Can you tell us some more about those versions? Because I think they could be really important with the you know, the advent of Google Docs and things like that. Is Google Docs now more of a challenge, perhaps, than MS Office, or is that becoming more of a challenge?
That's really, really unclear. That kind of market penetration data is unfortunately really poor. But let me talk about the things we are doing. So the Android port is coming along really well. We have a demo. You can type Hello World into the old user interface. It works reasonably well. You know, you can load a beautiful picture of my wife and lay text out around it. And, you know, that works well. I ought to post a video of it. I guess if you'd been at Linux Talk, you would have seen that demoed live. So that works well. It's not where we want to be with the Android port. And we have a chap called Tor Lilkvist, who is a hero, and a Google Summer Code guy, Ian Billett, who's working on making a pretty graphical viewer that does your page flips and your GL transitions and is much more slick than just sort of nailing the OpenOffice interface onto an Android device, which makes really no sense. So that's going well. There are several parts to that. Of course, one is the cross-platform compilation, the cross-compilation piece. So it compiles beautifully to Android from both Mac and Linux, which is great, and the unit tests run well under Android, so there's huge swathes of the code running. The rendering, of course, is now, I think, working to bitmap, so you can see Tor has some screenshots of, you know, document pages being drawn and then rendered inside a Java UI. And so really we're waiting for the Google Summer Code project and this rendering core change to pull together so that we'll have a nice Android document viewing solution. And, you know, I'm optimistic that this will be there. I think Italo, our marketing genius, promised it by 2013, you know, and I'm extremely optimistic it'll be there before then. So that's Android. Mm. In terms of the online product, there's all sorts of interest there. We really have a prototype. I just re-emphasize again that it's just a prototype of what you can see. On the other hand, it does a lot of things that people want to do. So there's clearly interest there in taking that prototype and funding it to completion. And, you know, there are various players around that are interested in that. And Charles, in fact, interestingly, is the center of attracting investment in that. And maybe he can give you some insight onto that.
Mm. Mm. Is he still there, Charles?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh. Ah, there we go.
Well, you know, I think that, you know, we've been patiently trying to build a sponsoring base, so to speak, to make sure that we could develop all of our, well, what we deem to be our strategic projects out there. And by strategic projects, I hear, well, obviously LibreOffice on Android. We just call that LibreOffice on tablets to make it simple. And LibreOffice Online as well. So we've been, you know, the first thing we had to do was to gather a series of sponsors around the LibreOffice Online projects. So this is also coming along nicely, but I think that you'll hear more about this, I'd say, around the fall season or beginning of winter, perhaps earlier. And what we've also been doing is that we've been specifically studying the requirements to have LibreOffice Online. Because interestingly enough, when we decided to work on this project, the immediate question that came afterwards was not so much how do we develop it, but how do we run it? How does it scale? You know, what sort of service are we providing? And quite funnily, the Document Foundation in and by itself is not interested in becoming a provider or a service provider of LibreOffice Online. What the Document Foundation is interested here is in developing by and through its community LibreOffice, and LibreOffice Online is being part of its subset. But for those sponsors or for those potential sponsors, I'm afraid I cannot actually disclose who they are or who they could be right now for obvious confidentiality reasons. But for these type of sponsors, the notion that they ought to be able to run LibreOffice Online for a very large number of users almost immediately is a critical one. So we've also been trying to address this, knowing that there are inherent limitations both to the state of the art in terms of cloud scaling, but also in terms of knowing exactly what the capabilities or the power of LibreOffice Online will be with respect to serving users and a stream of documents and data inputs that those documents might be receiving. Here I'm basically speaking about concurrent users, editing a document, for instance, visualizing the document, et cetera, et cetera. And so this is something we've been quite busy doing for a few months now. And I hope to see those fruits coming around, you know, I'd say about, fall season or winter.
Right, okay. And one of the big things that I've heard from a lot of people, I don't use MS Office, I haven't done it in a long time, but some people I know that do.
Me neither. It's amazing.
We're on the right side. So people have been talking to me a lot about SharePoint, which I don't know that much about, but you've got if you bring in the online kind of element to it, would there be some scope to make a SharePoint type facility for LibreOffice, do you think?
So there are two questions. The first immediate one is that Michael could actually talk to you about this one. Mm. There is a SharePoint connector already, and you don't even need to have LibreOffice Online for this. But the notion that the Document Foundation would engage, let's say, into developing a content management stack is not something we're interested in doing right now. I think that the first thing, it's a strategy that is going to be implemented and rolled over, and you're going to see more and more of this over the years if we're successful, is that what you're going to see is a more ubiquitous LibreOffice. But what you're not going to see is the Document Foundation becoming a competitor, let's say, to content management vendors, for instance. That's not something you're going to see. And my personal answer, but that's only my personal answer at this stage, is that SharePoint, if you want to compete with SharePoint, the best answer might actually not be to have a concurrent CMS that would basically handle your documents pretty much the way SharePoint does. I think it will be through a set of change in the state of the art, and will also be a time where customers will realize that SharePoint might actually be a great tool for them, but that it comes with specific drawbacks. And at some point, those drawbacks will be tough enough or difficult enough to withstand it, to keep and to live with, that they will actually want to throw SharePoint outside of their organizations. But that's just my personal opinion.
So this is Michael. So Charles, that's a great answer. I think, so we didn't really go through the 3-6 features. I mean, there are absolutely tons of them. One of them happens to be SharePoint integration. So, I mean, I was trying to catch up with things people can't easily see on the wiki already. Maybe that's not as highlighted there as it could be. We're using a thing called CMIS, which is a new API, one of these wonderful RESTful APIs for doing good things. And you can talk to your SharePoint server now. You can browse, load, save. You can load documents. There's some problems with saving that we're digging into, and we have an engineer at SUSE working on that quite actively at the moment. So that's good for people with the SharePoint problem, as we like to call it, of which there are many enterprise customers, sadly. One of the things you asked, Dan, I didn't get to, which was, I think, quite incisive, was the Google Docs question. You know, what do we do? You know, do we compete with Google Docs? And I think, actually, the best answer to that is that we don't compete with Google Docs. We enable Google Docs. So if you look at the patterns of use of that kind of online office suite, they're almost always backed up by an offline component as well, a fat office client, which is used for some minority of difficult documents which can't easily be dealt with online. And so I think we can do that really well and provide the ability for people to capture the cost saving of getting rid of Microsoft Office whilst still being able to deal with the most advanced and complicated documents, as well as Google Docs. So I think really complementary there, and actually help Google enable that. And there's one more feature that we're working on that was you missed out from your summary, which is the collaborative editing thing. There's another Google Summer of Code project here working on collaborative editing. And that's really exciting. So there's a whole chunk of work being put in to make it possible to edit the same spreadsheet with other people, but without a server really in between. which is quite cunning. Mm. So it's brokered via instant messaging, using the idea that everyone has instant messaging open almost all the time, you know, various different kinds. And so if we can use that mechanism to bootstrap collaboration, we don't need servers. We don't need to pay to host infrastructure to allow people to do what actually they really want to do, which is collaborate with their documents with other people. So, you know, I mean, where it's hosted doesn't make a whole lot of difference as long as you can do what you want to do, which is collaborate on the document data. So that's where we're going.
What Michael is also forgetting to say here is that actually this is coming in what, 3.7, 3.6 even? I'm not sure when it's coming, but what Michael is trying to say
that's
is
a bit
that,
optimistic, Bill.
Well, you know, what Michael is trying to say is that in less than a year, we're actually going to be able to use LibreOffice and by instant messaging collaborate together on documents. That's so it's not going to be LibreOffice online. This is LibreOffice, the client that you know, the office suite that you know, but you're actually going to be able to work on the same documents the way you do with Google Docs, together with your friends, with your colleagues, your enemies, or your pets. And you're actually going to be able to do that straight inside LibreOffice via instant messaging.
Yeah, so it's a great vision. I think in terms of a six-month timeline or a 12-month timeline, I think we're probably looking outside that for something that we want to be supporting in the enterprise. But, you know, it's like ButterFS, isn't it? I guess, you know, it will be ready to use much sooner. That's the hope, but clearly not for at least 6 months for a prototype. But yeah,
excellent. I think that could be a really big feature because one of the big things that people like about Google Docs, as you mentioned, is the collaborative editing, and this would even take the server out of the middle, which could be really, really kind of revolutionary. Sounds really good. I just want to jump back. Sorry, I just want to jump back quickly to something from the IRC because we talked about Android. And, of course, I'm an Android user, and I don't think too much about iOS, but people in the IRC are asking us, are you working on anything for iOS, and can you tell us a little bit about that for the Apple fans, maybe?
Sure. So the good news is that Tor Lilquist doing the Android port is a bit of an Apple fan. I didn't know that's good news, but he's an Apple fan. And so, yes, he's in parallel doing some work in his spare time to make it work on iOS. There's some interesting problems there. And interestingly, it ties into one of the code cleanups we've been doing in LibreOffice. And one of the things I'd like to sort of get across is how so many things are complementary in what we do. So one of the things we need to do is speed up our startup time on Linux, because that's the platform all right-minded people are using, right? So so one of the ways to do that is to glup lots of code together into one big binary, which helps speed up startup. This is what Mozilla does. But to do that, you need to do a whole lot of cleaning through the code to deal with our component system. We have a component system that's designed to fragment the code into lots and lots of tiny pieces. And so we have to re-architect that so you can either have it in tiny pieces or one big blob. And so we've done a huge amount of work on that, which is great. But that happens to be exactly what you need for iOS to make it work, because iOS requires a single binary all linked into one program. So this speed-up feature you do to a Linux turns out to be exactly what you need for iOS. The cross-compilation work we did to try and get our Windows builds improved for quality purposes turns out to be what we need for Android and iOS as well. So there's just a huge degree of complementarity in these things caused by the sharing of the code bases. So another thing I like to think of, you know, if you look in the Star Trek future of 2 years out, you know, deep future we're talking now, then sharing the same code base everywhere has a huge number of nice benefits. So every feature you add, you know, will be there on your Android device, it will be there on your online office suite, and it will be there on your FAT client automatically. So you say you add a feature like collaboration, you know, using instant messaging, suddenly this is available on all of those platforms to interoperate with each other seamlessly with full fidelity. And that's, I don't know, I get excited about that. It's nice to see one thing being done for one of these niches, then applying to all of the others. So whether it's, you know, developing header and footer work on Linux, which has a small desktop market share, sadly, then working on Windows, working on Mac, working on Android, working in the cloud office, and being available everywhere. I think that's just a really compelling thing. And if you look at other people's products, this is typically not there. If you look across the marketplace as a whole, there isn't anyone trying to share the same code base. They foolishly, in my view, re-implement a whole load of stuff, which I think is a high way to time wasting, really. So we're avoiding that trap, And a lot of the work we do is complementary across these products and platforms.
Right. So, Michael, to shift track a little bit here, I wanted to talk about your community. Now, sure. I've heard some of your project's critics saying that this is just a SUSE project, and that the only people who do anything are from SUSE, like you are. Is that true? What is the LibreOffice community really like? Is it diverse? Are there many clever people in it? What's it like?
There are a huge number of very clever people in our community. I'd really recommend that Free 6 wiki page to you. You can go through and you can look at the names of people contributing our marquee features that we have there. And you see a whole load of Red Hat people. You see SUSE people, of course. But you see volunteers there, producing and doing late features. You look at the engineering steering committee. And again, there are large numbers of volunteers there in the user experience front. Of course, producing code as well. Our base maintainer is a volunteer. One of the key calc guys producing these late features I'm telling you about is Marcus Mohart, a student. So yeah, there's a huge diversity in the community there that's just really encouraging. And it's fun because as you come up to the feature freeze, there's a certain degree of panicking going on. So on one hand, there's less people reviewing patches on the list because they're all desperately hammering out their own code to try and get it in. But also suddenly these people pop out of the woodwork you had no idea existed or were actually sticking with the project, desperately trying to get their feature in before the feature freeze, which is just, it's really encouraging to see that sort of flowering in the week before you do that. So, yeah, just look at the statistics. We produce statistics of the breakdown of active people committing code each month, and SUSE is a tiny fraction of that. The graphs speak for themselves. In terms of actual overall commits, the independent contributors and SUSE are dueling for first place with around a quarter, I think, and Red Hat is there as well with just slightly under that, I think 20%. And then, there are a number of other companies and individuals and people involved. So it's very diverse project. It's getting more diverse. It's encouraging to see, other companies like Lanido and so on starting to get people funded full time to work in the project and, do exciting fixes and work for customers. So, yeah, the project is increasingly diverse. That's something we want. I don't want SUSE to be dominant in this project. If there are good ways to stop that happening, we'd love to hear them. The governance is designed to avoid that happening. So there are maxima on, the number of people that can sit in any governing body. So, we've done everything we can to try and encourage other people. I go out of my way to try and get contracts for third-party people to do development work and bug fixing. To grow their business, to encourage more people to get into the project. So, yeah, I think it's just it's a cheap jibe to say SUSE is LibreOffice. It's absolute rubbish. Right. We're a large part of it, and we're proud of that. We do some great work, but we're by no means dominant or the majority or anywhere near that. If you compare it with how the Sun situation was back in the day, it's just a totally different project. Just amazing.
So would you say there's more people actually contributing code now than there were in the days of Sun? Because, there's been these claims made of diversity before. Even the Apache OpenOffice project claims to be diverse. But in real terms, would you say that the LibreOffice project is now actually seeing lots of contribution from people who've never participated before?
Yeah, so I think that's clearly growing. If you look at the statistics on the number of people who are active each month, the problem is it's very hard because some people commit a lot of code, and some people commit almost no code. And, it's difficult to judge the relative merits. And it depends during the cycle. During, the bug fixing cycle, often people don't commit as much code because it's a two-line fix that took a day to find. So it is true that there are a lot of statistical problems measuring these things, and you can't run away from that. But at the end of the day, one of the best measurements I've seen is simple activity. How many diverse and different people contributed code during a given time period, a month or a week or whatever. And the statistics there are very encouraging and growing. SUSE, if only the SUSE team grew at the speed that those numbers grow, it would be encouraging. They're an increasingly large, increasingly diverse community. And the news I want to get across is that actually it's easy to hack on LibreOffice. There is so much that needs doing, and even people with basic programming skills can get involved.
Right.
Build is not as terrifying as it used to be. Just get stuck in. Come and taste it and see.
Right.
And you'll see what fun we have. And, I really encourage people to do that.
So with all of these people involved and with all these releases happening all the time, how can you possibly keep the quality high on the project that you're producing?
Sure. So, I mean, I think the minor point releases exist to improve the quality. So I think that's rather a good way to do it, actually, to constantly release and up the bar. So as we go through the minor point releases, things get better and better and better. In fact, now I lie, we got one regression in the last release around shortcut naming, which I was disappointed about. But that's, I think, the only one that I can think of where we've actually introduced a new regression in the minor point release series. So that frequent pace cadence of every month doing a release actually incrementally has improved our quality, you know, by a large amount as you move through that timeline. So I don't see that as a fast release thing. If you're an enterprise user and you like a 2-yearly release cycle or an 18-month release cycle, then we are too fast for you. And you need, you know, but that's great because it gives you an opportunity to fund development by engaging, you know, commercial support for an enterprise quality release. And so, you know, that's right. A great way to support the project if you're in purchasing there. But otherwise, 6 months seems like a good cadence. It's what the Linux guys use for doing releases. And we've very carefully adjusted our release plan so that a really good stable version can get into the Linux releases that release every 6 months. So we're well aligned with the GNOME project and, you know, with all of that infrastructure that goes out there on that cadence. So hopefully that means that when you install your latest Linux CD, you know, you get the best LibreOffice you could have got at that time, which is useful.
Right. So looking back at the last, it's nearly a year and a half now, would you have done anything differently? Or do you think that LibreOffice has gone just the way that you and all the other folk who started it expected it would?
Charles, jump in, you know, you have a more contemplative view. It's an easy question, right? You know,
what? I don't think it is an easy question.
You're accusing me of being softball, Michael.
Well, you know, this is a tough one because, first of all, I'm not everybody else. I mean, I'm not all of the founders, so I can only speak for myself here. I think in many ways, LibreOffice has probably even, you know, gone beyond or some of our expectations, but in many other ways, it still is still a bit below what we could have expected. So I think there were many unexpected events. There were many unexpected good news. There were a few unexpected bad news. You know, I don't think it's radically different from what we expected it would be. And if there's anything that we could say with relative confidence was pretty much what was, you know, our objective precisely is the community. I think the community is diverse. I think the governance is extremely transparent. And just, you know, within that context, if we come back to the way things were in 2010 or even 2009, then I think this has been, we're orders of magnitude in terms of improvement, in terms of community leadership, community processes, community development, and code software development, of course. It is orders of magnitude better. So just for that, I'd say the contract, this is a victory, the contract has been done, and I think we should be very happy for this. But what's really interesting is that this is the first part of the contract, so to speak. This is the first part of the game. The first part of the game was all about making sure that one of the most important, or at least one of the major free and open source software projects out there was getting what it deserved, which is a decent governance, a decent foundation, and the proper community leadership to move forward. That was the first part. I think what has started to arrive in 2011 was, so to speak, the second part, which is, okay, we now have a solid community. We now have a solid project. So now what we need is a vision and a desire to move forward in terms of technology and, in terms of, I wouldn't say, well, I did say that before, changing or shifting the paradigm. I don't know whether we'll be able to shift the paradigm entirely, but what I can say is that this is definitely something we will have to address and that we must address right now?
So this is Michael. I have really two things I think that I regret, or at least I think we screwed up. At least I did personally. One was the people that we created the Document Foundation with were almost uniformly exactly the right people to choose. And there's some necessity of having a small group of people when you do something as disruptive and as necessary and important as what we were doing, I mean, in terms of building consensus and getting things decided. So there are still a few people I regret we didn't or couldn't include there. And, when you've been up very late producing a website the day before, and, you know, when we launched, we had binaries, we had a website, we were almost fully formed. And there were some people who felt excluded from that. And that I regret completely. I mean, they're people we know, and, you know, it's sad. So I think I'd probably try to have communicated more promiscuously, perhaps, beforehand. Although, you know, there's always a risk that, you miss making your splash with that. So I think perhaps I've got the balance wrong there. The other thing that I really regret is IBM. And I think these guys, you know, have some difficult decisions to make, and they have a lot of constraints that perhaps we didn't understand as well as we could. We didn't realize what Apache would be up for doing. That wasn't in the equation. And so I think that was a shame. But the punchline is that we're really making room in the project. You know, we have an IBM-compatible license. We'd be eager to have them back in the fold, you know, with the rest of the developer community. We, you know, bear no acrimony or grudges. There's nothing personal in it. We would just love them wrapped in that safe cocoon of, you know, friendly, a weak copyleft licensing that ensures everyone is doing the right thing and releasing code in a timely way and working together properly. I think that's, I think that's something that LibreOffice provides. We provide a safe governance and a safe infrastructure and license choice to make sure everything goes well, and that we all compete to outdo each other in terms of producing new features that we can all share. So I have some regrets there, but I think we can still fix that and make it better than ever it was before. So you live and learn.
Mm. Mm. Excellent. And someone actually asked me earlier today about, you know, whether the projects would re-merge, and I said, well, I don't know. But it's interesting to hear that that's something that you guys would be positive about. So fingers crossed in the future, maybe. So I wanted to ask a question that, it's to do with the OSI. So Simon, he's got conflicting interests here, so he can't ask this one, being the president and all. But I saw that you guys have just recently become OSI affiliates. So what does that mean? How's that going to affect the project and how you interact with OSI and so on?
Charles, do you want to take that?
How is that going to affect the project? I think that, but, you know, then it's going to be quite... So let me put it that way. I think that our statement, the statement that we're making by joining the OSI here, is that, we support, obviously, the free and open source software values, but what we're also doing here is that we're looking forward, to have this conversation that the OSI has started, not just with us, but with the wider free and open source community in general. And what we're definitely looking forward to is the conversation, especially that's happening, especially between the OSI and the FSF. And, you know, we're very pleased that this is happening. And so we look forward to being a part of it. We already have the FSF as one of our sponsors. As it turns out, we're now one of the members of the OSI. So I think, you know, this is definitely something that shows our commitment and shows that we're also, you know, very much in the center of, you know, what's happening with respect to, the licensing, with respect to the communities and the future of the communities, how the communities are formed, the goals of the respective communities, and of course the future of, you know, the free software licensing and open source licensing in general.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, it's going to be great to have you along on board on the OSI affiliate scheme, Charles. We're actually running low on time now. So are there any last points that you or Michael believe that it's essential that the audience gets to hear about? How can they volunteer? What should people do next?
Crikey. Well, there are lots of things that need doing. One of the things we really need at the moment is something that you can do with almost no technical skill. If you can download and install LibreOffice, you can help us here. We need people to jump in with QA in terms of doing bug triage and deduplication and confirming bugs. So lots of people report bugs, not as many as they could. And we're doing some work to improve Bugzilla to allow OpenID authentication. And, you know, some good things there we just approved, actually. But we need people to help out with that process to ensure that we get reports quickly to the developers so that we can fix them fast. And just closing that loop really helps. Here's another thing you can do is test 4.6,
right.
Beta 1. 3.6, I'm sorry. Jumping the gun. And, that's also very helpful. Again, the quicker we get bugs fixed, filed, the faster we can fix them. I don't think that any bug is too obvious to not need filing. Just file it, you know, because there's a limit to how much we can do. And sometimes what seems obvious to you isn't as obvious to everyone else. So, yeah, getting those things tested. And one of the things we discover is that few people do testing until we release the final version. And then they do a lot of testing and they find a lot of bugs. And that ties into our incremental point releases. But, of course, we want the best possible quality for our 0.0 release. And so, you know, the more testing you can do at beta 1 stage, the better. It's a reasonable product. It doesn't crash. It shouldn't be throwing away your data en masse. So, you know, have a go with it and tell us what you find.
Right. And then for more in-depth developers, I believe you have something called Easy Hacks.
Oh, certainly, yeah. I mean, if you're a hacker and you want to get involved, it's easy to do it. Don't get afraid by the horror stories of code complexity and nightmarishness. All programming is much the same. Anyone with, a persistence can not only get involved with the code, but learn a lot of things, you know, how it shouldn't be done in many cases, how it should be done in some other cases. And there are a lot of those easy hacks you can use to get into reading the code and doing useful things while you're reading the code. You know, people often say, oh, it's a waste of time fixing, you know, rubbish commenting, for example. You know, there are rubbish comments that just say nothing or point to bugs in an internal bug tracker that we don't have any access to anymore that died with Oracle. And actually, the useful thing is that you start reading code. You know, when I was a kid, you used to type games in. And actually just typing in a game out of a magazine taught you the syntax. It showed you what the code was about. You know, you started to learn and get things. And so we see people getting into the code that way, and they can't resist it. You know, they see something obviously broken, and they fix that. And suddenly they're into coding and improving the code and sucked into doing great things. So, just get stuck in. The Easy Hacks page is a great way to go for that.
Excellent. So of the usual last questions for you, modified for context, of course, would you say which is your favorite editor? Is it VI, Emacs, or LibreOffice?
It depends. Actually, I use all three. So I will claim that I am a GNU Emacs user as a typical thing. But if it's a all small right. file and... You know, I use VI a fair bit as well, and of course I use LibreOffice pretty intensively. So
right.
feel free.
And then
Can
you're,
I just
you're...
say Nano? I use Nano.
you certainly are, Charles. Yes, yes. I have to admit that I tend to use Rodeo notepads myself, but. Also about scripting languages, you know, I believe that the API in LibreOffice supports pretty much every scripting language. So which is your favorite, Michael?
Oh, crikey, scripting languages. Well, you know, the Python runtime is pretty clean and doesn't mangle your system too badly. You know, you can embed it inside a program and be reasonably sure it won't make your life misery. Although their new garbage collector seems to do that to the debugger. It, you know, it produces slews of Valgrind false positives and so on. So I think probably Python, but although really at heart, I'm more of a Perl guy. So I don't know. Hard. Mm. I mean, Start Basic is just really awful, put it that way. You know, but at least VBA compatible now in an even more awful way. So yeah, I don't know.
All right. Well, thank you very much to both of you for joining us on Floss Weekly this week. It's been entertaining and enjoyable to talk to you both. And we look forward to the great things you're going to do with LibreOffice in future. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Dan, LibreOffice, what do you think of all this?
I thought it was really interesting. Actually, I was as you could tell, I was really keen to find out about the web stuff, the LibreOffice Online stuff, because I think that's increasingly where things are going. I keep mentioning Google Docs and so on, but it seems to be really popular right now. A lot of people I know are using Google Docs full time as their office suite almost now. And I think it'd be great to have some document freedom and so on in the some free software out there to do this stuff online. And very interesting that Charles was talking about the whole hosting plan as well. I think he's got something up his sleeve that he won't tell us about yet. But
I've a hunch there's something going on there as well. Yes, yeah. And I was very interested in the IRC to see just how many people are using this. You know, it's normal to do a Floss Weekly and to just have one or two people in the IRC who've heard of it. And today it's full of people who are LibreOffice users who've got deep, informed questions. This is a really important piece of software that we've been talking about here, I think.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those really key packages for me on Linux particularly, because I'm a Linux guy, but it's a kind of key package for promoting the idea of open source and free software. And it's one of the, I suppose, I don't want to call it this, but it's one of the kind of gateway drugs, a little bit like Firefox is, that people try it on their system, be it a Windows or Mac system, and they think, oh, this is cool, this is all right, this open source software, it's not bad. And it gets them onto, you know, hopefully bigger and better things, and it's great for them.
Right, right. Well, you know, I'm running it on. I don't have Windows here anywhere in the house. We haven't had it here since 2005, but I do have it on the all the family's Mac systems, and I've got it on my Linux systems. It's one of those everywhere pieces of software that really needs to be installed on every machine for me, alongside Firefox, which is everywhere. Actually, I've got Chrome everywhere as well now. So I agree with you about that gateway. So interesting program. Mm. So, Dan, you know, as I am the terrible, unprepared newbie here, I haven't got the rundown of future shows. So do you have any things you want to plug while I go try and look up the rundown of future shows?
Right, yeah, of course. I thought you were going to ask me if I had the rundown, because I don't. I was frantically going to go try and scramble up for it there. I'll take a quick moment to just invite people to come and join us for OggCamp, which is now the largest free software and open source conference in the UK. That's my tagline. I have to keep getting that in. And it's going to be on August the 18th and 19th. It's up here in the north of England, in Liverpool. So if you're in the UK or in Europe, you want to travel, even if you're wherever you are and you want to travel, you know, you'd be very welcome. You can come along. It's all free to attend, but you need to sign up for tickets just so we have an idea of how many people are coming. We got some great stuff going on. We've got five tracks this year, so it's really expanded. We're going to have an open hardware track, and we're currently working on the lineup for that. We've got Fignition, which is an 8-bit computer that you build yourself. We're going to have workshops on that with the creator of the Fignition. We're getting, hopefully, fingers crossed, getting the Raspberry Pi people involved, who I'm talking to at the moment. We got some RepRap 3D printing going on. We got some Arduino stuff. No open hardware event would ever be complete without Arduino. And, of course, there'll be all the Barcamp stuff as well. So if you've got a talk you want to give, then you can come along and do that and put your stuff onto the Barcamp schedule. And then we'll have some wonderful scheduled speakers as well. Simon knows about OggCamp well. He's twice graced us with a keynote speech, which was fantastic. If you want to find out more, you need to go to oggcamp.org. That's oggcamp.org. And you can sign up via Eventbrite, and you can find out all about what's going on at the event there. I'm just wondering if I've padded enough, or how are you getting on?
I think you have. I've found the rundown. It turns out it's not terribly well populated at the moment, so I'll save that to round out my plugging here. If you want to find out anything at all about what I'm doing, if you go to webmink.com, you'll be able to find links there to the articles that I'm writing for InfoWorld and for ComputerWorld UK. And if you want to see me in person for some reason, which would be surprising, as you've already seen me on the video probably, then you'll find me at OSCON next. I'll be at OSCON for the July 18th. Recording of Floss Weekly, apart from the Johannes book interview, which is scheduled for next week, is the only other show that is up on the schedule at the moment. So I'm looking forward to Randall also scheduling some of the great list of guests that are down there. If you are part of a project that you'd like to see on Floss Weekly, then please go to twit.tv/floss and use the link there to send Randall an email message all about your project, or even better, get the project leader to do that. That's it for this week. We've heard from LibreOffice, and next week you'll be hearing from the Excito Johannes Book Project. But apart from that, thank you very much for watching or for listening. This has been Floss Weekly.